This is the Annie Fry Show.
Happy Monday. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Did you guys watch the Tyson-Paul fight?
I had trouble watching it.
Did you try?
not hard. It was something that I was kind of like, yeah, maybe I'll tune in.
Do you have Netflix?
Yeah, we have Netflix. So it was, no, I didn't watch it, to answer your question.
Did you?
I don't have Netflix, so no, I couldn't get on.
I tried to watch it, and I only really tuned in because everybody was on Twitter saying that they couldn't get in.
I know, that's kind of why I did too.
Well, I mean, I was interested in watching it. I have boxed for exercise before, so I understand more about boxing than I do anything that has to do with like UFC or wrestling. I don't understand any of that. Boxing, I would say that I understand how difficult boxing is. So watching two people go at it and seeing how quick they are and whatever, I finally did get through, and I was able to watch. I was able to watch the majority of it. Do you have any thoughts on it? I mean, they both went eight rounds. It definitely looked like Jake Paul was working him. Is Jake Paul like a really nice guy who just helped Tyson make money? Is that what happened?
Seems like it. Everything I've read and heard, not knowing boxing at all. And I know UFC a little bit more. I got a really strong ground game. That's all I got, though.
Are you talking about like grassroots voting mobility?
No, just like if I'm going to take somebody out, I'm going down to the floor. I'm going after your feet and your shoelaces.
Get tie them together real quick. Mm-hmm. Hold still.
You kind of outed my strategy, but yes, that is what I do.
Nobody will see that coming. That's the most Ryan Wiggins thing you could do in a fight.
You got to get them talking. And then you just kind of keep them talking while you're tying.
Ask them about themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's your favorite flower?
How long is that conversation? Crocus?
Is it a chrysanthemum? Can you spell that? And I just do that until they fall. Anyway. I don't know enough about boxing, but what I was reading was that everybody said this was such a light fight that it was like nobody was really going for the kill punch ever. It was like they were trying to make a long fight, which if that's the case, then it's not a real fight. The whole purpose of fighting is to knock the other person out, and if you're not doing that, you're making a show.
What do you think, Brad?
I'm with Ryan on there, but I will say that the rules and the way Mike Tyson was going to get paid show that he needed to go long. And you watch a couple of these videos that I saw online, punches were pulled. Like, it's like, oh, look, there's the Mike Tyson dip, and then you're used to him just coming back with that left hook or the right uppercut or whatever. And he starts it, and then he just doesn't do it. Ooh. And then I also saw some footage of Jake Paul throwing some pretty good jabs, and he just couldn't land on Tyson's head. And Tyson was bobbing and weaving. But I think those were early on, and then, you know, whenever you're 58 years old, you run out of gas pretty quickly.
I just can't. I just assume that all of these things are predetermined. Every time. Even when you're not supposed to think they are. But they both got paid.
Mm-hmm. I think ultimately that was the point, Annie. I think we found the whole point of the thing. It was the money.
Yeah. This is a shocker. Who didn't see that coming? I mentioned earlier in the show, Brian Stelter, I've got it pulled up here on his X post, and it's his pinned tweet. And I think that this is an interesting conversation to have, knowing that Brian Stelter, Mr. Reliable Sources from CNN, who got fired and then was like, can I come back? And they're like, okay.
Seeing eye potato.
Uh-huh. he put this out this weekend. The election results put an exclamation point on pervasive concerns about distrust and dissatisfaction with the news media. Now a reckoning is underway. Media execs and rank-and-file reporters are wondering what needs to change. I think this is interesting that this came out this weekend, and we know that Mika and Joe went to Mar-a-Lago Friday. So Brian Stelter from CNN is reporting that a reckoning is underway in the media, and people are wondering what needs to change. It's always important. Always, always, always important. When somebody shows up offering solutions, you need to make sure that you and the person offering solutions have agreed upon what the problem is. Because when you show up with solutions to problems that you don't agree on, you're never going to agree on the fix if you can't agree on what needs to be fixed. So in Brian Stelter's thread here, he says Media execs and rank-and-file reporters are wondering what needs to change. So here are some concrete ideas. A thread.
Emoji. Oh, interesting.
Podcasts, YouTube videos, and other digital sources are ascendant, while traditional news outlets are struggling to remain relevant. On social media, in-depth investigations get ignored, while misleading memes get shared millions of times. Frankly, some journalists feel defeated.
Oh,
oh no. That's terrible for
His
them.
His first point is basically like they were out-memed. The ironic thing is that they are the meme. When he says that traditional news outlets are struggling to remain relevant, what you'll hear from him in the furthering comments, like, to me, he's like real close to a breakthrough, but he keeps kind of sideswiping. He's not brave enough to go straight to the center of the problem. The question, the problem that I think Brian Stelter is trying to solve here is how to fortify and maintain news media, as it were.
Yes.
Like that, it's like he always gets close to something and then he takes a hard turn back into, frankly, some journalists feel defeated. Well, it's not your, we don't care. It's not our job to make sure you feel good about yourself.
Yeah.
You're not journalisming.
I'm actually kind of okay with the realization that some journalists feel defeated by this. Like, you've failed for so long, and now you're finally feeling the defeat? Seems like you're reaping what you sow.
He goes on, his next tweet in this thread is, what can news outlets do to regain trust and appeal to new audiences without alienating existing readers and viewers? Reliable sources readers have lots of thoughts and recommendation. I compiled them in this column. So he puts together for CNN a column of these suggestions. He goes on to say, listen to young people, learn from their media habits, and create content accordingly. How about new streams for center-right audiences and people who instinctively distrust politicians? I think it's funny that those are grouped together. Again, where he's like, maybe we should consider the fact that the center-right exists, and instead of vilifying them the entire time, acknowledge that they're out there and would potentially should be served with content about things that they care about. And he lumps that get it in by saying, if you are center-right, you instinctively distrust politicians. If the media is functioning correctly, they should distrust everything government and prove things to be true or prove things to be false. There should be no unearned trust in anything that politicians do from the media. Because if you're just willfully trusting what any politician or elected official is doing in the media, then you're not going to check them because you trust them. Like, at the very foundational basis of journalism is a verification of truth and facts in all cases with all people in all circumstances. But you're going to, in the same sentence, say here, there are center-right audiences that we should be paying attention to that are right there with the people who distrust instinctively politicians. No, you should be the one who's doing that. He goes on to say other streams could provide, quote, civic on-ramps, end quote, and relatable stories for first-time voters.
He's also acknowledging openly there, without saying it, that they have moved so far politically left that they've alienated even the center-right.
Yeah.
Like, well, we don't even have any product for them anymore. The center-right. It's not the far-right, but they're left to that.
He quotes, he shares this clip. It says, listen to young people and learn from their media habits. As a media executive who asked to be anonymous said last week, quote, we're programming for the audience we have, not the audience we need. Americans in their 20s, 30s, and 40s are scrollers by default, soaking up news and views through headlines, memes, vertical videos, and other bite-sized bits of content. This engagement isn't as easy to measure or monetize as, say, a Nielsen-rated TV newscast, but it's not the, quote, future. It's the present. Maybe it's the past. So news outlets should produce content accordingly. As The Wrap's Sharon Waxman wrote, quote, if people have moved away from network news and broadsheet newspapers to opinionated podcasts and TikTok lies, then that's one signal of how things need to change. again, sidestepping the problem here that needs to be addressed. How, I mean, they're saying that people aren't watching CNN because they're doing too much old-fashioned journalism on a newsy newscast. That's not why people don't watch CNN. And what CNN is doing in presentation, is it really that different in presentation? Like visual, the way you consume what CNN has to offer, is it really that different than what Fox News is offering? The details are certainly different. But I mean, Fox News is still a news channel. It's still a cable news channel, and they are doing well. Brian Stelter goes on to say, meet people where they are, like right here on this platform. As Milk Carton wrote this week, quote, social media can no longer just be thought of as distribution. Publications that aren't, quote, fishing where the fish are, end quote, are at risk of losing market share. So Brian Stelter is saying, like, X is a place to be.
It's interesting. This is a postmortem where they're realizing that they are dead and they have to change things. He wants to do it more for political reasons, but seems like he's maybe trying to appeal to the decision makers who are losing money on this and saying, hey, you guys, if you did this, you'd make more money. And also, we'd regain our political relevance in this conversation.
Yeah, I think like when you're watching Brian Stelter assess the situation, is it because their ratings have been so low for so long or just because their politicians lost?
It's politics for him.
Next tweet, make content for casual news consumers and those turned off by politics. As at C. Wurzel recently wrote, quote, people like to consume info when it's informally presented by parasocial relationships with influencers, end quote. Can news people make the, quote, influencer leap? That to me seems completely the opposite. What we want is an unfettered pursuit of truth presented for us to consume, not for you to input.
Yes, exactly. He's missing the big point here, which is that nobody trusts you. Your brand is tarnished because you tarnished it.
Yes. He goes on to say pop media bubbles through voter interviews and focus groups and make sure those sessions inform editorial decisions and panel discussions. So he's saying, like, check out what the voters have to think. Go through focus groups. See what people are saying. Like, what does that have to do with what truth is? What does that have to do, like, a bill that's being presented in the House, whether it's being presented by the right or the left, and then it gets conglomerated with a bunch of other things. That way, there will be a political hit job for everybody who supports it because it's the Clean Water Act, but it gives $100 billion to Ukraine. Made up scenario, I think, but maybe not. I don't know. When report on the fact of what it is, instead of using your news report as a plea to influence people to not eventually support the scary orange man and the Hitler-esque Nazi-like supporters that he has. I mean, Stelter, can't you see the difference here? Going back to what I said at the beginning, the problem he's trying to solve is ratings for news outlets. It's not the death of journalism that he's trying to solve. And if anybody were to go out there and advocate wholeheartedly in the pursuit of journalism for truth, this would be the time for excellent journalistic reporting, like Catherine Herridge type reporting, where whatever it is, she's got her highlighter out and she's telling the truth and she's an advocate for what is real and the chips fall wherever they may. You get to read her report or consume the information she reports and you go, holy crap, I didn't know that. And then you, in your own intellectual capacity, say, I feel X about this. That's what CNN has taken off the table. That's what MSNBC has taken off the table. That's what Fox News has answered because they took that off the table. And in my opinion, Fox News does a wonderful job of reporting the news. But of course, they also have commentators, political commentators on their network that do lean conservative because there's nowhere else for them to go. Or at least there wasn't when they became so successful. Stelter says start stories at the beginning, not in the middle. And this is what we talked about earlier. Instead of Trump vows to impose tariffs, begin with what's a tariff? As Tim at Tim J. Graham puts it, quote, if the media thinks voters are uneducated, teach them. How many members of Congress? How many Supreme Court justices? There is such a club that exists when you watch a play. Like, there is so much assumption that is made by the viewer. When you turn, which you don't, when Morning Joe is on the television, they make such a presumption about what you have brought to your viewership of that show. There are just things that you have to feel that they're assuming you feel when you tune in. And when you tune in to watch that and they spoon feed you all of the disgust that you need that day to get your daily hit of why you hate Donald Trump day after day after day, and they make that assumption, then they don't bring in anybody new who might think even slightly differently.
What's amazing is all of this inward-focused analysis that Stelter's doing, is coming to, and you sounds like you have maybe a couple more left, but they're coming to a conclusion that really the methods by which we're broadcasting and the message that we're broadcasting are fine. No, we didn't really do anything wrong. We just didn't reach enough people with that message. And he's completely missing the point that people aren't tuning out because of technology. That's part of it. People are tuning out because they don't trust you.
Yeah. He goes on to say, learn from podcasters. Note the big differences between talking and reporting, but recognize that both have value. Again, the outcome of changing that is a political benefit outcome, not a reporting. I would just counter to Stelter the exact opposite. What we want to see is actual real reporting. Now, I don't need you to mansplain to me a little bit more why I'm wrong to vote Republican. He says, don't compromise on facts, but make room for feelings. Look for the deep story. Solicit questions from readers, viewers, and actually follow through with answers. How about research? Digital tools allow for two-way communication instead of media's typical one-way top-down approach. Answering questions puts the audience wants and needs first. Build trust beyond politics. As long as Trump keeps repeating lies and stoking controversies, the press will be seen as a hostile force by many Trump voters. But folks who don't believe or even bother to read those stories might still read coverage of, say, sports or business. Isn't that an amazing way? He's got a couple more tweets here. I'm not going to go on because we got to take a break. But he's trying this whole time to solve a ratings issue, an audience size issue for these news broadcasters that are the CNNs, the MSNBCs of the world, the people who feel like they lost this last election. If your network, if your news network feels like it lost this last election, that is all you need to know about the direction of your news reporting agency to the American people. It's a repudiation of what you've been doing. It's not because you don't have enough people to brainwash. It's because enough people have said pass, hard pass. Because when people did tune into your networks, you were advocating for something that American people don't want you to be advocating for. They don't support it. They don't support what you stand for. And in one of his conclusions here, he has the stones to say, as long as Trump keeps repeating lies and stoking controversies. How ignorant.
You've learned nothing.
You're committed to it.
Yeah. Yeah. We need to do a better job of getting the same message and the same methods by which we get there out, because that's how we were beat. We had a great message. We just didn't quite reach enough people with it.
In one of his last posts, he quotes an Inquirer.com post, and the headline is 2024's other big loser, the mainstream media. Is there any path forward? And Stelter says, and start small with local news. As Philadelphia Inquirer columnist Will Bunch recently wrote, quote, the war to reclaim reality begins there. Yeah, just go live in your own reality for as long as you need to, because it's working really well, at least at this point, finally, for the country.
We need more control over the media, is what he's saying. We didn't have enough control over everybody.
Brian Stelter, you tried so hard. You need to try even a little bit harder. I'll retweet his thread so you can read it all for yourself. If you so choose, on X, at Annie Fry Show, come follow us. We'll be right back.
And I'm feeling good.
This is the lead-in I was hoping for giving away Guns N' Roses tickets.
You just sound high. That's not, you gotta
try
again.
It was supposed to be sexy. I can't really get in my lower register right now very well. I'm a little hoarse. I don't know.
You're a little hoarse? Like,
yeah,
a pony?
Pony. We are going to give away Guns N' Roses tickets within 5 seconds.
I was going to say, I thought we were going to do it right now.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, go. your number is 314-241-9797. 314-241-9797 if you want to win tickets to see Guns N' Roses the night before Thanksgiving. There you go. You get a pair.
What number?
Oh, I didn't say, did I? How about caller number 9?
To what phone number?
314-241-9797.
314-241-9797, caller number 9.
Indeed.
Okay. Break.
314-241-9797.
Yeah, they're all full now.
Yeah.
Good job. Average job.
Yeah, I don't know that I did a great job on that one, but we've got them all week, so.
There'll be another chance to do better.
The person who wins will not care how I did.
Did you do anything fun this weekend?
Let's see. Seems like I did. I already can't remember. No.
No. Just say is your answer. Say yeah. No. What about you, Brad?
I did the anti-fun. I did a bunch of housework that needed to be done and yard work that needed to be done. So that's what I did all weekend long. So
did you complete it?
You got it all completed, which is good.
I think that's fun.
Oh, I do remember what I did this weekend. Mostly catching up on paperwork. It was a blast.
Yeah, they come back to work.
Yeah, it was so fun. My wife's sister, I don't know if you knew this, my wife is a twin. Yeah, you knew that.
My husband's a twin.
Because your husband's a twin. We've talked about this before. My wife is a twin. Her twin sister came into town.
Yeah?
And
that was a blast.
Here's what's crazy. They don't plan this. They were wearing the exact same outfit.
Are they identical twins?
They're very close. I think that there's like two main kinds of twins. There's fraternal and identical. They are like a third type that's rare. That the split happens
in a
weird
spot. Sounds like something that would be reported on CNN.
Yeah. So they do look a lot alike, but they're not technically identical.
Yeah.
And when they go out, it's fun because our spouses are also teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So once in a great while, she'll come on a weekday and they'll meet at school and the kids just flip out. Because there's two of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My husband's a twin and they are as fraternal gets.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They don't look alike.
No, I don't think so. No, they don't look alike. Yeah, that's an interesting thing. I didn't do much this weekend. It was very mundane stuff. But I also have been trying to get Christmas decorating up, and I haven't gotten to it. It is very difficult in a house of six people to get the house where it needs to be before the Christmas decorations go up, because I am very particular about the house being spotless clean before any decorations go up. Do you guys see that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to an extent.
Do you do the decorating?
I do the tree because the tree is large and has to come up from the basement. So I bring the tree up. Because
you're the man.
And all the bins of decorations, I bring them all up and kind of set everything up and then let Katie do the fun part.
Are you like an elf in that instance? Does Mrs. Wiggins take charge? Is she a take charger where it's like, all right, we're getting into this and she's commanding the ship and things are getting done, or do you do that and then you exit the stage?
Number two.
You get out of there?
Yeah, I do a big number two. I bring everything up, and then oddly, she really doesn't care what happens as long as we have our little record player in our living room, and that is our radio. It can play the radio too, but we use it for records a lot.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of old Christmas records.
Yeah.
Probably from my dad.
I have a ton of those estate sales.
Yeah. And they're a dime a dozen. You just get so, no, nobody cares. It's just there's so many Christmas records.
There's
from
like
that era.
One Sinatra Ave Maria or something on it. And you're like, oh, I'll take that for a quarter. And then so you listen to one and I don't know what the rest of the stuff
bunch
is.
Bunch of other stuff that who knows what it is. Country bluegrass Christmas from 1978. You know, it's like mm-hmm. weird stuff. So as long as we have Christmas music
we
playing.
We might have the same record collection.
She's fine, and then she'll go back and kind of tweak everything later. Like the kids will put the ornaments up at this point, and she'll do a lot of the fireplace. Oh, we have to have the fireplace going too.
Heck yeah!
And
is
she'll
it a wood
come
fireplace?
Back. Mm-hmm.
Do you build fireplace. The fire, or do you let the
I
wife?
I do build the fire.
That sounds like there's more there.
There's not. There's definitely is not. I use a burner log. We don't get enough draft going through there. We can't get enough draft, so we have to start with something burning.
Is this the only time you
Oh, no,
burn
we
a
use
fire?
It all we use it all winter.
Yeah, it's my favorite thing.
It's great.
Do you, Brad, how do you guys go about Christmas decorating?
So it's more of a team effort, especially in the outside. Like Ryan, I get the stuff down and we put it all out there, but it's not even like a worker elf thing. We've actually got our outside decorations figured out. We know what we're going to do, so we just go out there and we accomplish that goal. Although this year is going to be different because we had to take out one of the bushes that we would usually wrap lights around, so we're going to have to refigure that. But the other side of that is, too, we've got those LED wash lights on the outside of our house that you can change colors and all that other stuff. They're up, and they're up all year long. I had them in red, white, and blue for the election and after and all that other stuff. So, like,
not orange?
Not orange. Oh. No, we saved that one for Thanksgiving. But we put those up, and we just, I mean, that's a press of a button into the correct season to get those to light up the correct color. But Terry will decorate the inside. Like, I'll come home from work one day whenever she's had a day off or something like that, and she'll put up a bunch of stuff. We don't go like wild crazy on the inside, but she's got little snowmen and stuff like that she likes to put up.
I love decorating for Christmas, but it's definitely like it. You got to get into it. You got to be in the mood, and then once it's on, it's on. And it is so nice now. Like, my son is 5'11" almost at this point in time. Super helpful. Last year was the first time I was like, Charlie, put this stuff up over here. And then I just walked away. And then my oldest daughter, she is a great baker. So she'll be like, can I make Christmas cookies? And I'm like, yes, you can. So I'm starting to delegate everything. And it does not make me sad to watch this stuff happen around me. And if it's not exactly the way I would do it, I mean, I could tweak here and there. But I'm like, last year, I had my nieces and nephews over. We did a Sunday brunch. And when we put up the Christmas decoration, we had decorated the whole house. The tree was the last thing because I had to wait for trees to like be, because I get a new a live one. Had to wait for them to be, I guess we got ours last year at the Market Basket in Edwardsville. And I just let the kids decorate it completely. And I was like, I'll just edit it later. And I just never did.
Mm-hmm.
There was like, all of the ornaments were down here in this section where they were taking them out of the box. And I was like, it's fine. It kind of made me smile looking at it.
It's funny looking back. My brother is 8 years younger than me. So I kind of realized this earlier than most, that I think that young men go through a period of time, and I'm going to say this is roughly ages 13 through 19, where they really want to prove to you that they're strong and capable.
Let them go.
And you just go,
don't let them hurt themselves.
Man, I gotta move this couch. I wish there was somebody around here that could do it. And usually if they're between those ages, yeah, they're going to go, oh, I could probably try that, and whatever it is. And then, whether they can or not, if they're on the low end of that, they probably can't do as much. But the older and stronger they get, man, there's a sweet spot there where you can get a lot of work done by just suggesting things.
I say to my son, like, technology stuff, hey, can you go fix that? And he just goes and fixes it.
Mm-hmm.
And I now act like I don't know how to do it. And I've been wondering if I'm just going to say old people. Of which I think I'm putting myself in the category. Have you guys been lying about your ability to manage technology this whole time?
No. No, they're not.
Because when I go, gosh, this doesn't work, my son's like, let me have it. And he saunters over, and I'm like, I don't know, I think it's broken. And then he fixes it in 10 minutes, but I didn't have to get up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like getting on to the other side of this thing where, like, again, not intended to be the pejorative, but old people have not understood technology for so long. I think he just didn't want to do it.
Look, though, if you were born during World War II and you're now living alone and you're like, you know what? I just can't seem to figure out my wireless router. I'm going to go, I believe you.
Yeah, I know.
I don't think you do know.
But I think that the answer here, though, is they don't understand it, but they also haven't attempted to understand it because they know somebody else will do it for them.
Okay.
And I'm there for that.
That's fair.
Smart move.
I get mad when a program changes. Like, Word is, I can't use Word
program,
2003 anymore. I got to use 2007 now.
An app?
Yeah, an app.
You That's said program. I thought you were talking about your shows.
Well, I am talking about a computer program, not just an app on my phone.
I hate when they changed the intro to Jeopardy on me.
Like when Clippy went away. I'm like, come on, where's Clippy?
Clippy.
I need help. Who's going to tell me what font to use?
That's the most annoying thing in the history of computers.
Stupid Clippy.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to give you the results of today's YouTube live chat poll. Is Donald Trump cool? Yes or no? Who is one of the most famously cool celebrity characters that had money and technology and knew how to do things? Tony Stark, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was an article in Variety at the end of October where Robert Downey Jr. comments on a question that was asked about him of Elon Musk cosplaying Tony Stark. And I found this to be really interesting. I'll give you that story when we come back. Plus, the results of today's YouTube live chat poll. Go vote. Is Donald Trump cool? We'll be right back. We got 314 votes in so far in the YouTube live chat poll. Is Donald Trump cool? Come give us a vote and a comment here. I'm going to plow through a couple of these comments before I talk to you about the Robert Downey Jr. Elon Musk article here. RSG said, President Trump is cool. All the kids are doing is dance all over TV, at college and pro football games, even at professional MMA fights. Shelley said, kind of like having a cool parent who wants to be your friend and they don't parent in a way that is helpful for their child's growth. I guess Shelley's a no.
Okay.
Do you feel like Donald Trump is cool?
Yeah, I do. And I think they hate it. I think the powers that be cannot stand that people are doing his dance, that people, you know, refer to him. There's any sort of comedy. My camera just fell off, so if you're watching on YouTube,
how'd that happen?
You're going to get a first-hand view of my nose. Hello.
Well, that's kind of what we were saying at the beginning of the show when we were talking about the Mika Joe visit to Mar-a-Lago on Friday. And, you know, when they go on MSNBC and they're doing morning show, they are very, very strongly like, we don't agree with him, but it is important to meet with these people and to talk with him. That is so far the opposite of what you were saying the entire time that you were trying to make sure he didn't get elected. You were like, do not platform him. Do not have a conversation. The folks on the left are literally telling you not to spend Thanksgiving and Christmas with your families.
Yeah, but over now, Donald Trump.
But now Mika and Joe are at Mar-a-Lago with Donald Trump. Which is it, folks?
That's a good point.
Which is it? But I don't believe that them going to Mar-a-Lago is as much about politics, because I actually feel like it would make more sense for them to double down on their efforts now and be able to be like, see, we told you. When all the bad stuff starts happening, see, we told you. The culture shift, which is very much so in line with whether or not Donald Trump is considered to be cool, because he doesn't have to be cool. It doesn't matter if he's cool. Going back to Rick Moranis, the Speaker of the House. Don't need him to be cool. I need him to do all the speakery things.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody was talking about Rick Moranis and Ghostbusters, which I've seen recently for the first time ever. I don't know about that. I was thinking more Rick Moranis in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Mm.
See, very smart.
I'm more of a Peter Scolari on this.
I have to Google that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Peter Scolari played Rick Moranis' character on the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids TV show. So I'm thinking he's a little bit more like Mike Johnson. What do you think now that you've Googled it?
The first question is, what ethnicity is Peter Sellers? So I don't think I even know how to spell
no.
Scolari.
You don't. He was also on Bosom Buddies with Tom Hanks.
Oh. I don't know. Stop asking me questions that I don't have a responsibility to know the answer to. Ron said Trump went full cool when he raised his fist and said fight. Was that the turning point? It could be.
Yeah, it was. Although he had all the credentials to be cool before that, the media had just succeeded.
That transcended.
That broke it.
Kurt said, yeah, it's a different kind of cool, but man, just look at what he's been able to accomplish in the face of all of this BS. The bologna sausage that has been heaped on Donald Trump is of historical proportions. And he's the next president. You wouldn't believe it if it were a movie. You'd be like, oh, come on.
No, that's what's amazing is that even before we get into presidency part two here, everybody has to acknowledge that even if you're on the losing side here, this is a period of history that you will remember forever.
Scooter said, I don't think Trump is cool in the sense of being a role model. Many role models aren't considered cool, which is what makes them a role model. And also, I could think of a lot of things about Donald Trump that I would look at my children and say, let me tell you about Donald Trump. Let me tell you about what he embodies to me. And that could absolutely be a role model. But Scooter goes on to say that the Beatles were arguably cool. We should have that conversation.
No, they weren't.
Beatles were arguably cool. People copied their hairstyles. Are more men dyeing their hair or combing it over, using more hair product?
That's the criteria?
Sold. Donald Trump is the least cool person I've ever met, because I don't see people...
Just are people doing the Rachel? That's what he's saying? That's what makes something cool or not cool?
He started the comment with, the Beatles were arguably cool.
That's still up for debate.
Speaking of cool people, what's your opinion on Robert Downey Jr., the man, the actor, the felon?
I really want to like Robert Downey Jr., but he's in all those stupid political videos. Like, dude, just bow
out. Isn't
it
disappointing?
Yeah, you're
like, you didn't have to do this.
The rest of them, you're always going to be in them. You don't have to be. You're like my friend. Why are you in those?
Brad, you like him?
I appreciate what he's overcome, the mistakes that he's made, and how he's risen above it.
You want to talk about a comeback story.
Yeah. I appreciate that about him. I think he is the perfect person to play Tony Stark. I cannot think of a better person to play Tony Stark.
Well, I mean, Tony Stark is Tony Stark, but Robert Downey Jr. made Tony Stark. When you say Tony Stark, everybody mm-hmm. knows what that means. He did that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so, I mean, I like him from that sense, and the political thing is just like a bone that you got to spit out every now and then. You're like, no. Like
listen to this Variety article. Robert Downey Jr. and Elon Musk briefly shared the screen together. Did you know this?
No.
In Iron Man 2.
Oh.
In which Downey's hotshot business tycoon Tony Stark met Musk while at the Monaco Grand Prix. It was a fitting moment as, quote, Iron Man screenwriter Mark Fergus once told New York Magazine that Musk partly inspired the screen iteration of Tony Stark due to their technological prowess, cockiness, and overall hot-headedness. But what does Downey think about Musk in real life? Well, this Variety article goes on to say, during an interview appearance on the On with Kara Swisher podcast, Downey was asked point blank about his thoughts on Musk's, quote, cosplaying Tony Stark, end quote, in real life.
Oh, okay.
So Downey said, I've only met him a few times. As an ultimate 60-year-old recovering white American male.
Recovering?
Yeah, I don't know what that
means.
Is
he transracial?
We don't know. Tropic Thunder.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I just wish that he would control his behavior a little more, but that's not on me. I know that all this idea of, quote, it's all okay because we got to get to Mars doesn't really hold water with me. But again, you know, you have to look at all that he's done that demonstrates why he's valuable. Then the screenwriter for Iron Man, Fergus, said in 2022 that the movie version of Tony Stark was a mixture of these three characters, Elon Musk, Steve Jobs, and Donald Trump.
What?
Oh, man.
He viewed the Marvel character as if, quote, Musk took the brilliance of Jobs with the showmanship of Trump, adding, quote, he was the only one who had the fun factor and the celebrity vibe and actual business substance.
Wow.
One of the greatest characters of all time is Elon Musk, Donald Trump, and Steve Jobs.
That actually makes a lot of sense.
It makes a ton of sense. And I contest that Robert Downey Jr.'s comment about Elon Musk was a compliment. He didn't say, when you say, what do you think about Elon Musk cosplaying Tony Stark? The answer is that Tony Stark is a cosplay, like a literal, non-real, it's a fictional character based off of someone Elon Musk and Variety author. I will add on to this that Tony Stark is a combination of Elon Musk and Donald Trump. I thought you loved Tony Stark. People are going to have identity crisis over this.
Yeah, what's he doing in these videos? It's like Mark Ruffalo calls him up. He's like, you got to be in this, right? And he's like, I guess I'll do this.
Michael Keaton was also in, he was in a Spider-Man Marvel movie. Michael Keaton came out and said about Elon Musk, they don't really respect you. They laugh at you behind your back. They think you're stupid. They don't want to hang out with you. They have nothing in common with you. They're not your bros. You guys, watching this post-election recalibration of everything. You know the mean girls that have been in your life? You know the bullies that have been in your life? Have you ever watched them get their comeuppance? Mm-hmm. Have you ever been able to watch the entire social scene? People who have been willfully bullying people for so long. Have you ever watched the person who's the a-hole who's got their finger up when they're passing you and being a jerk on the highway? Have you ever watched them get pulled over? It's like that every day. We've arrived at a place where the social order is being restructured. St. Louis, our very own St. Louis, Wesley Bell, probably not going to have a whole lot of policy points in conjunction with what we'll have here on the show. But Wesley Bell replacing Cori Bush, the mean girls are losing and common sense is winning. And maybe it'll all get back to policy. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that Donald Trump ended up being cool.
Yeah.
Brad, do you think Donald Trump is cool?
Oh, yeah. He's super cool.
87% of 333 people agree with you, Brad. Yes, Donald Trump is cool. It's a pretty vast majority. Doing the Trump dance. All over the world these days. It's pretty amazing. Thank you for voting today and commenting. Thank you for being with us here. And if you're listening on the radio at 97.1 FM Talk or streaming us on the Odyssey app, you keep it right here because Mark Reardon is next.